We're here with Murray State President Dr. Randy Dunn. We meet monthly, and we are now meeting ahead of a Board of Regents meeting scheduled later this morning, where it's a special called meeting to hear their thoughts on raising tuition for Murray State University. And the Council on Post-Secondary Education in Kentucky has set a cap at regional comprehensive universities like Murray State at 5%. Is that what you plan to propose today at the meeting?
No, actually what I'll be doing, Chad, is proposing to the board a percentage rate increase that's less than what the CPE's ceiling has been set. So I'm going forward with the board to propose a 3% overall increase in tuition and fees for the 2012-13 academic year. As we tape this, I don't know how they'll act upon that, but I'm doing something less than what the CPE parameter or the CPE ceiling is for us this year. And it's somewhat unusual given positions we've taken here at the university in the past to go less than what we're allowed. But I do think there are some circumstances this year that play in to that recommendation on my part, and then the board will take that information, those facts, deliberate on it as always, and make a final determination in their meeting.
We'll talk about why you've picked that number here in just a second, but let's first talk about what 3% would do for Murray State University in general, what that tuition increase would mean for the fiscal situation at Murray State.
Well, no matter what we would do up to the amount allowed by the CPE, we're going to end up using some operating reserves to get through 12-13. The question simply is, how much of those reserves are we going to have to apply to make it through the coming fiscal year? And that is going to be then relative to the amount of tuition increase we seek. If we go forward with a 3%, if that's what the board endorses, we're going to looking at raising on a gross basis, not a net basis, but on a gross basis, about $2.5 million. We're also applying some overage in tuition from the previous year. We budget a certain amount, of course, in our revenue. Sometimes we get a little over that. That has been the case for the present year. About $500,000 will apply from overage this year to help us make next year's FY13 budget. So with the $2.5 million gross on a 3% increase, about $500,000 we're going to apply has been remaining in this year's budget from tuition. We're looking at $3 million gross. Now, we haven't discounted that yet to pay for scholarships, and we discounted about a 35% rate. So we're not going to see all that, but let's just talk in the gross numbers. So at this $3 million coming in, we might feel very good about that and think, wow, that's, you know, going to help the position of the university. But you have to remember that coming in even before that, I was going to say right behind that $3 million in new revenue, but really it preceded the determination, is the fact that we're going to suffer a 6.4% loss in our state appropriation, which for Murray State's close to $3.3 million. So while we feel very good about this tuition increase and the money it would give, it's essentially going to be eaten up by the amount of money lost in state support. And for a number of reasons that we may talk about, I just didn't feel that this was the year to go to that maximum rate, which, as you mentioned, for us would have been 5%. I think there were some factors that would cause us to be very careful and restrain our growth this year, and hopefully that'll be supported by our students when they hear that. Because if that 3% is maintained, my recommendation is what's adopted by the board, that will be the smallest percentage rate increase in tuition at Murray State in 14 years, and it will have our pricing at the lowest of the public institutions in the Commonwealth.
What are some of the factors that prompted you to do that, to go in a bit lower?
Well, I guess from my standpoint, there were a number of things that caused me to look in that regard. One of which is that we just cannot keep doing, and our board has acknowledged this too, we just can't keep doing over and over what has been this pattern that's been created, not just in Kentucky, but across the country, where you have a loss of state support. Some years it's fairly large, like it is for us this year. Some years it may be a buzz cut of 1% or 2%. But we've seen this decline in state support over many years, and particularly since I've been here now 5.5, going on 6 years in Kentucky, that same trend taking place. to just continually go to tuition to get that made back is creating an untenable situation. Now, our pricing is low enough. We have some flexibility. If we were at the high end of the price scale, it would probably be compounded even more. We're not. We're among the lowest priced institutions in Kentucky. Usually Kentucky State and Murray State are tied for the least expensive pricing. That is the case presently. But even with that, this continual notion that as the state support is lost, we're just going to keep going back to tuition and get it recovered is not something that can be sustained over time. And at some point, some institution has to, you know, say, in our case, time out racers, let's think about this, and we're going to do that. Our board, as I alluded to, has also carried this value for a long time. We've had this discussion literally every year I've been at the institution when it came time to set tuition. All of the members who we've had serve on Murray State boards have held to this value that they want the pricing low. They want quality high, but they want also a tremendous value that the university provides. And they've also been saying, really, each year as we've considered tuition, we just can't keep climbing it at these rates that every year put more and more squeeze on the families who traditionally send their students to Murray State. And they've been pretty strong about this notion as well. So I think it's the year to really show that we do believe in that and that we're willing to try to do things on our end to make that lower tuition increase work, even in an environment where we're losing state support. There are some other things that go into play here as well, and if you want to explore those, I'm glad to, with regard to pricing and whatnot. One factor that comes into play, of course, is salaries. And education, particularly higher education, is a human capital enterprise. 70 to 80% of our budget goes for salaries of faculty and staff. We gave a very healthy increase a year ago. Our employees had a 4% raise across the board coming into this present 2011-12 school year. Well, that was very healthy. Most of our other institutions didn't do an increase at that level. And I do think that portends for us the fact that we would not be looking at raises for our employees for 12-13. Not that they don't deserve them. They all work very hard. Although other things we've committed to, obviously, will be paid. Promotions that people earn. We've been working on a 3-year implementation to bring our hourly paid staff salaries to market level. We're going to continue the third year of that implementation, where job audits take place, obviously, and a new pay grade is assigned. We're going to support that. Nothing's going away in that regard, and we'll probably have somewhere in the vicinity of 20 to 25% of our employees who will see their salaries increase on some basis around that. But an across-the-board increase, I don't envision. If the board decides they want to do that, and we have modeled some budget scenarios for them around this, then my recommendation to them would be to allow tuition to rise concomitantly with some sort of salary upper. But that's got to be their call. If they hold fast on salaries for a year, which ultimately is a board decision, then I think we can make it work at the 3%. We've really built the budget around this lower number in anticipation of something we thought would happen, but we know now is not taking place. And that was the potential for a student fee to be applied, to be used to fund a new library facility. As we've been looking at this over the past 18 months or so, we knew that if it was the case that a student fee went on for a library, that would equate to roughly 2 or 3% of a tuition increase, shall we say. It would have been a fee, but it would have equated to about that amount of money. On that basis, we knew internally that we were going to be looking at a very, very low tuition increase for this coming year, in the hopes that then combined with a fee, it would have given us a rate increase about what everybody else is doing. Well, the board has indicated we're not going to pursue a library on a fee basis, so that frees up that equated percentage of tuition, if you will. But since we had made the plans and really had created a structure to be able to live with a low level of increase for next year, I don't feel that we should rush out and add 2 or 3% on just because now we're not going to have a student fee. Another thing that's true is the fact that we'll use next year to look at some increased efficiencies, reallocation of funding, just looking at a whole package of changes to our financial model that could be made. And once we take that on, that will give us a roadmap to stabilize our funding to some degree. We don't know where that's going to go. We don't know the changes to be made from that, obviously, until we get into that work during the next fiscal year. Again, I just think there's kind of a moral imperative not to go to the students and say, oh, go ahead and give us that 2 or 3 extra percent in tuition without us going through that process.
Do you think Murray State's ahead of this reorganization of how you manage your finances within the Commonwealth, or do you think other universities in Kentucky are doing the same thing?
Everybody has to be in this game. Some have done a few bits and pieces of it, maybe not in as comprehensive a fashion. Others are going to be getting into the work in some way. Everybody kind of figures out how to do this on their own campus. Some institutions, a couple of our public colleagues made very quick decisions, almost reflexive when we got the announcement about the 6.4% cut for next year when that was made with the governor's budget announcement in January. But everyone is going to be doing this work in whatever way, in some form or fashion, because they're not going to be able to sustain the business plan or the business model that they've had out without doing that study.
We'll be back with another segment with Murray State President Dr. Randy Dunn in a moment. We're back with Murray State President Dr. Randy Dunn. We meet monthly. You can hear this conversation archived at WKMS.org. It's close to commencement. A lot of Murray State students will be entering the job market. And let's talk about that job market for Murray State students. Is MSU doing anything differently to prepare our graduates for employment?
Well, I think we're trying to take a more comprehensive approach that really almost every college and university is looking at now. Part of the responsibility the university has, I feel, is to help our graduates find positions. You know, we can't go out there and necessarily write the letter for them and what have you. But we do want to look at everything that we can do for their success, because the impact that a Murray State graduate has on the world comes usually from the fact that they get jobs and they go make their way and have success in career that can lead to success in life and influence and impact and all of those good things you want from a person with a university education. So career services folks have looked to beef up the job fairs that they're doing, increase the offerings as far as training and background. In a number of our courses, and that's, you know, part of their work, but they've taken a new approach to try to reinvigorate that process, particularly around the job fairs that they sponsor for our students. You have a number of courses, particularly capstone courses in various disciplines, and I teach one of these now in nonprofit leadership. We've talked about that before, and I actually have done a unit, and others do this in other fields. I do a unit in my course which is essentially a career preparation unit, and we look at how they present themselves and professionalism in interviewing and how to conduct yourself in those processes that lead ultimately to a successful and well-paying job. There are probably things beyond that we should look at. In fact, Gina Winchester, who's our executive director for regional outreach, and I have had some discussion about this. One of the goals that we have for our outreach efforts is economic development and job creation. We undertake sponsorship of various projects. We work with our area development districts and things of that nature. But we're thinking there's probably something we could capture within that area that could be helpful, maybe in a more indirect way, in building jobs in the area and supporting those, all of which could be helpful for our graduates. You know, I think in some ways, we're doing what a lot of schools are doing to try to beef up our services to students in that field. But I will tell you the best thing that we can do for Murray State students is ensure that we're keeping the strength of the degree, that the Murray State brand remains strong and is recognized as a quality degree, not just within Kentucky or the region, but wherever they would go nationally, that we have opportunities within our programs, and I think particularly here about internships and short placements, pre-career, that students have an opportunity to avail themselves of just in almost every discipline we teach, certainly all the professional disciplines. And while we want to look at the direct services that are important to them, there's a whole benefit that also comes from ensuring that the degree they come out of here with prepares them for success, and we believe it does. And that's probably the biggest thing we can do to help our graduates.
Does Murray State keep any statistics of placement rates?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, but now don't ask me to quote those because I didn't look them up before we, you know, record this today. But we do follow up. In fact, as part of our accreditation, which is you and some of our listeners remember, we're in the middle of right now. We're in the thick of preparing our reaccreditation case. And as part of that, have to look at follow-up with our graduates at various time levels. So we do have that, and generally they fall in line very well with what while I can't quote you exact numbers, I don't want to do that for fear of being wrong. I can tell you that our placement numbers, the percentages, are very much in league, just as good as any of the other state schools. In fact, better, as I recall, that we would kind of typically see as our competition.
Let's move on and talk about one of your bosses. The Murray State students reelected one of your bosses,
right.
Student Regent Jeremiah Johnson.
Right.
How does he play into the board dynamic?
Well, I think Jeremiah, really like every student regent I've seen here at Murray State University, is very much a part of the board dynamic. As I, you know, referenced in the earlier segment, I've had a lot of board members come through here at Murray State in my 5.5 or so years. I'm really down, and I think I've mentioned this before, I'm down to one of my original hiring board members in really kind of a relatively short period of time. Well, I've seen this be the case with all of the boards I've worked with here. The student regent is folded in and certainly made to feel like and be, which he or she is, a full functioning member of the board with all rights and privileges thereto appertaining. Certainly not seen as an add-on or included, really on an ad hoc basis, depending on the issue. I think it's been the case with Jeremiah, has been with other student regents, SGA presidents, that they are part and parcel of the board's work, deliberations, decision-making, conscience, everything that goes into the dynamics of a board at this level.
Around 10% of students cast ballots in the SGA election, and for you, for this being a member of the board, are you happy with the 10% turnout?
For the student regent being a member of the board, yes. I thought you were saying I'm a member of the board.
No.
Such it could be. You know, that's actually something in private institutions is fairly typical, but not at Publix. Back to your question.
Yeah.
I am bothered by that. I mean, to sit here and try to say otherwise would be silly of me. A 10% rate of voting, particularly when considered in conjunction with the high stakes of the vote. I just got through talking about the fact that this is a big deal. SGA president at a public Kentucky institution, sits as a voting member of the board, et cetera, all those things I was mentioning. And then to see that low turnout rate is disappointing to me. I think it's something that SGA as a whole, those who we employ at the university to work with student government, need to be looking at and thinking about. I don't think it's particularly a point of pride. And I would commend them to maybe look at ways that could be strengthened over time. Of course, you look at public voting rates, and that's pretty dismaying as well, isn't it? And maybe that's reflective of you know, what we have happening at the universities. We're not, Chad, we're not that far out of line with what other schools are seeing, by the way.
But it's interesting, when we interview folks that are specialists in elections, they say the reason that the election or that the turnout rate, voter turnout rate in the U.S. is low is because there are so many elections.
Well, that's
But if you look at an SGA election, it's annual.
Right, and there's certainly some ceremony around it as the announcement takes place in conjunction with all campusing and, you know, that type of deal. I don't know that this is the case, but one of the phenomena that I think we're experiencing here may be, and I haven't studied it, haven't looked at it, don't know, but again, as I think about it, it's probably worth some investigation, is that student elections may be strongly driven by the Greek community, that candidates who get in may have backing from fraternities or sororities. They tend to come out in response to candidates, and I'm not talking about any one election. I'm looking at this kind of collectively. But we've got about 10% turnout of student voters. About 10% of our student body is Greek. Again, I don't know who votes and who doesn't. But I have this kind of general sense that it's maybe been kind of deferred off to the Greek system, that they're going to be the ones, you know, in the campaigns, you know, working student voting and all of that type of thing. And I hope we can expand beyond that, that we can look at ways to involve the campus student body in larger fashion. So it's not just something that, oh, yeah, the Greeks put up their candidates and you know, run the campaigns and somebody gets elected. Again, at this point, that's only theoretical. I don't know. But what I do know is that there are a number of folks that should be concerned about this, and over time, I hope, you know, those groups can take it on and look at it. Now, you know, a president can't fix everything. I don't look at this as something that I've got to go out and solve necessarily. This has to be something that emerges from the body impacted. But I do hope there are things that could be looked at to address this, and if there's some role I can play, I'm sure glad to do it. That, you know, they do this in a great way. The voting's online. There's a nice window to get it accomplished. The campaign is pretty well structured, doesn't drag on forever, and pretty well managed in terms of the rules. And there's a focus on it at this point in the spring semester. So something's not clicking, and hopefully over time we can maybe figure that out.
Well, Dr. Dunn, thanks very much for your time.
Thanks, Chad.